Film Spotting is brought to you by Spout.com, a gathering place for people who love movies. Sign up for free at filmspotting.spout.com.
What kind of a show are you guys putting on here today?
You're not interested in art?
No.
Well, look, we're going to do this thing. We're going to have a conversation.
From Chicago, this is Film Spotting. I'm Maddie Robinson.
And I'm Adam Kempinar. On this week's show, Maddie and I help you form your holiday wish list or help you decide what to buy us this holiday season with our top five DVDs of 2007.
Plus, your time travel movies feedback, Massacre Theater, music by Calexico, and a review of the new Stephen King adaptation, The Mist.
But first, Noah Baumbach's latest dysfunctional family throwdown, Margot at the Wedding.
Will the wedding be crowded?
I can't say I have a lot of hope for the whole thing. She's only known this guy a year.
Why are we going then?
We're supporting her. Margot tried to murder me when we were girls. She put me on a baking sheet and sprinkled me with paprika and put me in the oven.
I'm just writing my vows. Are you working on anything now?
Yeah. How about you?
I hate that question. What do you do?
You ask me.
Margot at the Wedding is Noah Baumbach's follow-up to his widely praised, including here on Film Spotting, The Squid and the Whale. Like that 2005 film, Margot offers its share of narcissistic artists, confused pubescent teens, and truly uncomfortable family squabbling. For every genuine moment of affection between sisters or mother and child, there have to be 25 absolutely painful daggers of dialogue. Maddie, despite the appearance of Jack Black and some undeniably comedic bits, I don't think anyone could describe the experience of watching Nicole Kidman berate her soon-to-be married sister Pauline, played by Jennifer Jason Leigh, her future brother-in-law, played by Black, or her son, her husband, the neighbors, and anyone else who crosses her path as pleasant. But then you really liked the mostly unpleasant The Squid and the Whale, so were you equally rewarded here?
No, it's funny. You have a problem with movies you call torture porn.
Movies
sure. like Saw, basically where there's a victim and they're ingeniously tortured throughout the film.
I don't necessarily have a problem with the concept. I just can't watch it.
Okay, fine. Yeah. Well, for me, I think this is exhibit A in torture porn. When you take someone, a miserable, despicable creature, and then just run them through the gauntlet of despicable situations. And my first reaction after watching this film was to go to Mr. Baumbach and say, you know what? I didn't ask. I did not ask. I'm not your therapist. You don't need to subject me to this. And even if I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt that these characters spring from a hyperactive imagination and not from his own experience, I have to ask why. What is the point? Why do I have to spend time with these miserable people? And It's not that I need every character to come out of Boys Town or, you know, the Bells of St. Mary's. I don't mind watching bad people do bad things. Woody Allen has made a career of it.
Yeah.
You know, Jerry Seinfeld and so forth. But at least they had them do interesting things. I went to school with most of these people in this film. Okay, basically, these depressed, privileged Easterners who really don't have a problem in the world, so they have to make up their own problems. And it basically stems from their own insecurity. I didn't like spending any time with them in school, and I sure as hell don't like spending any time with them on the film. I didn't get it. I don't like it. I don't want to see another one.
Well, I am right there with you. We've been agreeing a lot lately
here
on Film Spotting, Maddie, and unfortunately we are on the same page with this film. There were three movies that I saw in Toronto that I had really high expectations for, and I came out disappointed. And I've talked about these a little bit on the show. The Assassination of Jesse James was one, I'm Not There, and Margot at the Wedding. So with all three of these, I wanted to see them again outside of that fatigued festival state and see if I'd react differently. And obviously you heard me last week with my revelation on I'm Not There. But with Margot, I was struck by a few things the second time. I did laugh a bit more. Some of Jack Black's asides are funny. He plays this
because
kind of
Jack Black
loser.
Is naturally funny.
That's
the script
right.
is not compelling him to be funny.
No, that's true. But there are a few good moments, and there are a few good lines that he has as this future brother-in-law to Margot, and she can't stand him. He's this wannabe kind of artist, and he's just kind of an all-around loser, which you can see Jack Black playing, and he does play it well here. Some of those are funny, and Margot's brazenness is so crazy, so insane that sometimes you do have to laugh at it, I think. It was also more interesting to look at than I remembered. I just remember watching it in Toronto and thinking, wow, this is the ugliest movie I've ever seen, just to look at, which does match the tone of the film
well,
and
I
the
actually
story.
Think cinematically it's a step up from Squid and the Whale in terms of presentation.
See, I didn't feel that the first time, and this time around I did. As I said, I did notice some things I didn't that first time around. It's really grainy and it's diffused. It almost looks like 16mm, mm-hmm. but it's Harris Savides, who's the same cinematographer who shot Zodiac. So it's obviously by design,
yeah.
and there's a naturalism to it that, again, works with the story. There is also a little bit more of a structure to it than I remembered, where Baumbach does some nice overlapping of characters and themes that does hold the film together a bit, but not nearly enough. I was still disappointed with this film the second time around. It just never rose above feeling like painful scene after painful
yeah.
scene. And there weren't enough new notes or discoveries in the characters like there was in Squid and the Whale. It was just that same ugly note being pounded over and over again.
And that's the thing. At least in Squid and the Whale, we are watching this world through this young kid's eyes. And there's at least an undercurrent of hope that runs through that film
mm-hmm.
in that he has this blind devotion to his father. We all realize that his dad's pretty much a loser. And there's that hope that he is going to be disillusioned at
yeah.
some point. That is never here. And everybody who enters this movie, I almost felt sorry for them. John
yes.
Turturro?
I know.
Oh, my God. What have you stepped into? Basically, every single scene is two people talking sort of in a droll. Matt, here, let's try. You and I will try and do a
okay.
scene. Okay.
A little Massacre Theater?
Yeah, a little Massacre Theater. Okay. You ask me how my night was.
How was your night?
Okay, no. Even you got to be even lower. You got to talk even lower, and you got to trail off a little bit even more.
How was your night?
Well, I slept in Dad's bed.
Mm-hmm.
I thought about killing myself with a knife, and then I thought about maybe touching myself.
Uh-huh.
And then I decided to watch Leno. You know, and that's yeah. basically what it is, and I don't understand why we're supposed to appreciate that.
No, I agree with you. I don't understand it either. And I do think maybe in terms of the way it's shot, maybe it's a step forward, but I feel like in many ways it's a step back. This feels like that really personal autobiographical film that The Squid and the Whale was supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
This feels like the film that would come before The Squid and the Whale
yeah,
to me
good point.
In many ways
good
where he's
point.
Trying to work through these issues. And there is one really great scene in the film, I think, at a bookstore where Margot is doing an appearance and she's answering questions from a fellow writer who she's
yeah.
also sleeping with. And he mostly out of nowhere delivers a line that just cuts
yes.
her to the bone with that single line. And it's the first time where we've seen Margot really be in the position that she's usually putting other people in. But that scene starts with him asking how autobiographical the story is they're
mm-hmm.
talking about. Just like Baumbach got asked over and over by people in interviews for The Squid and the Whale when that came out, and then we hear later how upset people get with Margot for the fact that she keeps
yeah.
using them in her stories, recycling their kind of personal tragedies and memories. And again, that's the same thing you got with Squid and the Whale. And so I feel like Baumbach is trying to work through some personal issues here, and I applaud him for that. I love personal movies. We talked about Bergman, how he's a very personal filmmaker, but there's a way to weave your personal issues and memories into a compelling story that transcends just collecting a bunch of ugliness, which is exactly
yeah.
what Squid does, I think, and this movie doesn't.
Don't vomit your Oedipal complex on me. I'm not your therapist. And you're right. That scene in the bookstore, I think, is probably the best that this film comes at approaching a say the same style of Hannah and her sisters.
Yeah.
But those successes are few and far between. And I just felt sorry. If this kid is indeed, you know, a foil for Baumbach,
mm-hmm.
I just felt sorry for this kid.
Yeah, Margot's son.
Margot's son, exactly. I want to call social services on them.
Yeah, I know. You do. And I'm really glad you evoked Woody Allen there again with Hannah and her sisters, because the movie I thought of a lot that a lot of people don't see, and it's a straight Bergman ripoff, but the movie Interiors, this film is Interiors. If you've seen it, you will see that Baumbach is really ripping it off, and I know that he's really a big Eric Romare guy, and maybe if I had seen more Romare films and could appreciate him more, maybe I'd appreciate Baumbach more. I don't know. But Interiors is a film with Diane Keaton playing the Margot role, the Nicole Kidman role, where
oh, yeah.
she's an artist
I
who keeps
see that.
Using...
She can do that.
Yeah, she can, where she can keep kind of using her own personal moments, and she's really hated and reviled by the other sisters, and it's all there, even the husband, I believe, or the boyfriend who resents her because she's
mm-hmm.
a great artist. I mean, we get those overlapping things here just as we do in Interiors. I would say go check that film out over this movie. You brought up Nicole Kidman, though, saying maybe you would prefer Diane Keaton. I think we need to end at least by talking about Kidman in this performance. It sounds like you aren't big on her. I actually do think she brings something
I think
to
she's
Margot
fine. I mean, she is perfectly ugly as this witch. And, you know, it actually calls to mind Laura Linney in another movie that people are raving about. Actually, you got a little self-conscious today when you went to Metacritic and Rotten Tomatoes and found out how well The Savages,
which is, we savaged.
We savaged it. And I think it's maybe just because we came from the Midwest. We're just too pie-eyed and
I don't know
what it is.
Well adjusted.
Because I cannot get over. I wanted to take a shower after this movie. Yeah. I just did not want to spend any time with these people.
Yeah. No, I do hear what you're saying. I do think that Kidman brings a certain amount of innocence to Margot that she doesn't know that she's doing anything wrong, despite the fact that she's totally out of control. And then when she does realize she's doing something wrong, it sends her off the rails of self-loathing. And so she makes you kind of see her as a train wreck, one you can't take your eyes off of, rather than someone you just completely want to strangle, I think. Like, for example, a character in the next movie we're going to discuss, The Mist.
Now listen, everybody. We are experiencing some kind of disaster.
No, it's the end of days. Oh, my God.
Something in the mist! Shut the doors! Shut the doors!
I don't know whether it's man-made or natural, but I do know that it's definitely not supernatural.
So, Adam, did you grow up reading Stephen King?
I remember reading some of the Dark Tower stuff, Roland and the Gunslinger and the Eyes of the Dragon, but the horror stuff, as I've said many times on this show, I'm a real wimp when it comes to that stuff, so
even
I
reading
avoided it.
See, even I remember reading it every summer. I think The Stand was my favorite novel for a while. I absolutely loved The Shining, but I've kind of gone away from him and really have never had any affection for the movies made from his source material. Now, Frank Darabont actually helmed two other Stephen King adaptations, The Green Mile, and a film that I think owes its legacy and popularity entirely to the DVD format, and that's The Shawshank Redemption. He's also the director behind The Majestic. So, Adam, I want to ask you, on the Frank Darabont scale of awesomeness, is The Mist officially billed as Stephen King's The Mist Shawshank-esque or Majestic-ish?
Well, the movie here is pretty simple from a plot standpoint. Yeah. It really is this mist with giant creatures in it that you don't know what they are or how they got created until you learn it later. And you see these people trapped inside a grocery store basically trying to figure out what they're going to do. That's the basic story here. And I'm happy to say that I do think it's much closer to Shawshank than The Majestic. I think it's much closer. I had a lot of fun with this movie.
I have to admit. I had a blast.
And you were skeptical, too.
Yeah.
I really had to talk you into it
a little bit. I'm not a horror guy at all.
Me neither. So. Yeah. But there is the horror suspense aspect of the story that works here really well, I think. And then, of course, there is this entire other allegorical level where I'm sure somebody somewhere has outlined already, point by point, exactly how this movie is mirroring the U.S.'s involvement in Iraq. I'm sure it's been done. You've got these characters trapped in a grocery store, obviously trapped in this quagmire. Things are going to end badly if they stay. They're going to end badly if they leave. And yes, I know Stephen King published this story in like 1980, long before we invaded Iraq, but this movie is prescient in a lot of ways beyond just the notion of how people behave when ruled by fear, which also comes up here.
See, now that allegory for society that happens inside the grocery store, I actually don't think that stuff works as well.
Okay.
I think that material is handled better in a series like Lost, on ABC.
It worked for me here, and I did, though, really like the way this movie was shot, in almost a documentary style. It's really subtle, it's handheld, but it's not shaky, and there are a lot of close-ups, and there are cuts that always happen on movement or jump to the other side of a scene that make you feel like there are multiple cameras in this grocery store capturing the action. And I think that first scene in the grocery store, when the mist arrives, is really masterfully shot and edited. I think it's really tense. I also like the way the camera moves in the mist. The editing's really elliptical and interesting. And the bottom line here, Maddie, is I'm just cynical enough to dig any movie that has the nerve to suggest that the only thing more dangerous than flying giant bugs is a room full of people, especially when they're scared and led by a religious zealot, played here by Marcia Gay Harden.
Yeah,
I'm just cynical enough to buy that.
And she's a lot of fun because she completely chews the scenery here, and she's over the top. And for Marcia Gay Harden to be over the top,
I kind of felt like she just straddled the line.
I loved it. I mean, but my point is that this is a B movie.
Mm-hmm.
This is, you know, a second double feature at a drive-in, and that's why I liked it. It reminded me, I'm almost going to sing that Rocky Horror Picture Show song, you know, it reminded me of the Day of the Triffids from the 1960s. I'm not suggesting people run out and see this film, but it's definitely something, put it in your Netflix queue, come February or March, you're not going to be, you know, disappointed when this thing shows up. The special effects are cheesy.
They are cheesy.
They're terribly cheesy. The acting is wooden. The dialogue could have come off a cereal box, and I just loved it. I have to tell you my experience of seeing this film. I saw it up by Loyola here in Chicago, and the heat in the theater was out. So there were seven of us in the theater. As I walk into the theater, this woman goes, "You can sit next to me and we can cuddle."
Nice.
And she, you know, we're just laughing. And during the entire film, we are just yelling at we're yelling at the screen. We're just laughing, having a great time when people get eaten by these giant bugs.
Bugs.
That's what this film is. It's a film about giant bugs in a mist. And I had a blast with it.
Well, maybe I had a little bit more of an intellectual blast with it than you did.
I think that's where this film, when it tries to be smart, is when it trips itself up.
I would just say, I don't think, though, that the movie produces any of its real scares or its tension from the creatures or the gore. I think it comes from the way it does expose human nature a little bit.
Yeah, fine.
That's
fine.
The scary
but
stuff.
When they're in the pharmacy, I think is probably the best scene. That
it
is scary, really
is.
Nicely done stuff.
But it's not as scary as the mob finally turning on this group that wants to escape.
Nah, see, I wasn't with that.
Okay, see, I was with that. So the way it kind of digs into human nature a little bit, I think, is interesting here. And it is worth mentioning. We have to at least talk about the ending without giving anything away.
Ooh, I don't know.
I don't want to say anything, but we have to at least admit. We got an email from James Eric, one of our listeners, who said that he's never had a crowd react to a movie the way they did to this one. Cheers, boos, and clapping throughout, and the most mixed response he's ever heard walking out of a theater. He'd be interested to hear what the feedback would be like from the people who've seen it. I hope some of our listeners have seen it. I want to hear what they think about it as well, especially the ending. Again, we're not going to spoil anything. I'm just going to say that as much fun as I was having with the film, when Darabont got to the end, and from what I have read, it's different than the King ending.
The
King ending is very open-ended, and apparently King fully approves of the Darabont ending, but it's much more not open-ended. It's much more closed
and definitive. I thought it was obvious. I could see it coming. I could see it coming.
I could kind of see it coming, too, but I was hoping it would.
Ah, see, I liked it.
I hated it. I hated the ending.
Oh, our theater, we just got a lot of, like, that's what's supposed to happen.
Really?
Yeah, whatever this movie was putting in front of me, I was just lapping it up.
Okay, well, it didn't work as much for me by the end, but we both did have a good time with this film. So maybe check out The Mist, and I guess we're saying try to avoid Margo.
I say you can rent The Mist. I mean, is there any real reason to see this on the big screen?
I would say it's worth seeing on the big screen.
Really?
I had enough fun with it up until the end that I think it's worth paying for.
All right.
I do. Okay, well, The Mist and Margo at the Wedding are both in theaters now. Margo in limited release. If you agree or disagree with our takes, if you've seen either of the movies, or if you have any other thoughts you'd like to share, please email us at feedback@filmspotting.net. You can also give us a call at 206-203-2463 and leave a voicemail.
Time for a quick break. When we come back, Massacre Theater. And the way I see it, when you guys leave off an obvious pick like 12 Monkeys from your top 5 list of time travel movies, there can basically be two reasons for it. A, you guys just didn't remember it. Or B, you guys are morons.
Both.
Or C, obviously both. Stay with us.
I live out yonder where the snakes and scorpions run. Got myself a little gold mine to bank on. But one day my heart sank when I saw Adam in town. I knew her love would be the death of mine. L'amour passé, l'amour obsolète. Pourquoi perdre sa vie à chercher l'or d'un cœur? Je ne me noierai pas dans ce désert mystique.
Hi, this is Todd Haynes, the director of I'm Not There, and you're listening to Film Spotting.
He's got a good body, but he doesn't have to look in the mirror every 2 minutes.
I have a great body, and sometimes I go months without looking.
He's kind, sensitive, and gentle. He's not afraid to cry in front of me.
This is a man we're talking about, right?
He likes animals and children, and he'll change poopy diapers.
Does he have to use the word poopy?
Oh, and he plays an instrument, and he loves his mother.
I am really close on this one. Really, really close.
Welcome back to Film Spotting with Maddie and Adam. I'm Maddie, he's Adam. It's time now for Massacre Theater, the part of the show where Adam and I massacre a film we love and you, the listener, get a chance at winning a free DVD. Now, last week we massacred, as it turns out, the very beloved Groundhog Day, a tie-in, of course, with our top five time travel movies.
Yes, very beloved. This was our second most entered Massacre Theater ever, tied with Anchorman, actually, for that honor. And Maddie, I have to ask you, I like this movie quite a bit, love Bill Murray in it, but were you at all surprised by just how much our audience seems to adore this film?
Not at all. This film is on TBS all the time, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I love this film.
Okay.
And I love to see the respect for Stephen Tobolowsky's greatness as Ned.
Oh, Ned Ryerson.
So many people wrote in quoting Ned the Head.
They did.
I loved it.
It was great. It was very funny. Also worth noting, Steve McCoy in Woodstock, Illinois, when he entered Massacre Theater, he said Groundhog Day, which was filmed in the city I live in. I had no idea, but I checked it on IMDb. A lot of this film was shot here in Illinois.
There you go.
In addition to Pennsylvania, but a lot of it was shot in Woodstock and other towns in Illinois. So, interesting bit of trivia there.
All right, Mr. Kempinar, please reach into that film spotting hat and pick out this week's winner.
And the winner is Michael Mattioni from Roanoke, Virginia.
Ah.
Congratulations, Michael. Email feedback@filmspotting.net and we'll set you up with the DVD of your choice.
Now, you guys got to look menacing. Can you be more menacing?
And action.
Time now for this week's edition of Massacre Theater. All we're going to say, it ties in with this show.
Yeah.
Are you ready, Maddie?
Just give me a second.
Okay. I start it. You want to do any exercises first? You want to act like a horse, maybe?
I'm going to do some Meisner and then work into Chekhov.
Okay,
Here we go.
You are going to give me the action.
And action.
I'm asking you to keep this conversation just between us. I feel awkward enough as it is. We've got a situation here. I think you can appreciate that.
Yes, sir, I sure can.
I tell you, son, this really came along and knocked my wind out. It's got me up nights. That's the truth. The right thing to do. Sometimes it's hard to know what that is. You understand? I need your help, son. If I'm going to move on this, there can't be the least little shred of doubt. I have to know if what you told Blank was the truth.
Yes, sir, absolutely.
Would you be willing to swear before a judge and jury, having placed your hand on the good book and taken an oath before Almighty God himself?
Just give me that chance.
That's what I thought.
And
scene.
God, we got it on the first take.
Yeah, right.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
All right. Well, if you know what film Maddie and I just massacred, email your name and location to feedback@filmspotting.net by Wednesday, December 5th.
The winner will be selected randomly from all the correct entries and announced on next Friday's podcast. To listen and to get official Massacre Theater rules, visit www.filmspotting.net.
I miss you more than Michael Bay missed the mark when he made Transformers. I miss you more than that movie missed the point. And that's an awful lot, kid. And now you've gone away. And all I'm trying to say is Transformers sucked. And I miss you.
Maddie, we kick off listener feedback there with a really nice song from one of our longtime listeners. I believe Ross Hungry Rat Helmet is his nickname, and he obviously wanted to weigh in via song to our poll question last week. We obviously know where he stands with Transformers here. We're going to give you the choices. We wanted to know, tying in with Thanksgiving, of the movies we reviewed this year on the show, the biggest turkey so far was. And here were the choices: Across the Universe, Fracture, Pirates of the Caribbean 3, Spider-Man 3, and Ross's choice, Transformers. Maddie, how did it come out?
Oh, it was pretty close. Pirates of the Caribbean 3 was first at 32%. Spider-Man 3, a close second at 28%. Transformers, right behind at 23%. And then Across the Universe, bringing up the rear at 10%, along with Fracture at 7%.
Surprised at all by Pirates coming in number one there? I think that was your vote, wasn't it?
Well,
or Across the Universe
Across
was.
The Universe was. Yeah. Well, because I'm not quite sure if people were anticipating Pirates of the Caribbean 3 to be good.
Maybe.
Because I didn't even see the film. I'm not really interested in that trilogy.
Okay.
So I guess I can't say I'm that surprised.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe those other films. We tried to include films that we thought people, in addition to us, had high expectations for. And obviously there were a lot of people out there that didn't like Pirates of the Caribbean 3, which is the same sentiment I have towards that film. But let's get to this week's poll question then, Maddie, and it ties in with a review of Atonement, hopefully next week, the new Joe Wright film. Of course, he directed Keira Knightley in the film Pride and Prejudice from 2 years ago. So we want to know what you think about Keira Knightley. So the poll question is, Keira Knightley stars in Joe Wright's Atonement. I like
all of her performances, her work in period dramas, her potential for greatness, her cheekbones, nothing, actually.
And Maddie, how do you vote in the poll?
I love her cheekbones.
You do love her cheekbones? That's all you're giving her?
Yeah, I love those cheekbones.
Okay. Well,
I can't name another film that
no,
she's
that's
in.
True. You really haven't seen anything else that she's done except maybe the first Pirates film. Right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, her cheekbones are great in that.
And they are great in that. I have seen Atonement and I think all of her films except for Domino. Maybe there's some early stuff I'm not aware of, but her big films I've seen. Unfortunately, right now, I might have to go with her cheekbones as well because I am not that impressed with her as an actress, but I would actually vote her potential for greatness. I saw something in Atonement, which, again, hopefully we'll review next week, that did catch my eye beyond her cheekbones. So I think maybe she can blossom into a fine actress someday. I'm going to give her the benefit of the doubt there. So that's my vote. We want to know what you think about Keira Knightley. Please go to filmspotting.net and vote in the poll. Maddie, let's get to our feedback from a couple shows ago. We did our top five time travel movies tying in with Southland Tales, and we have an angry Swedish listener.
Oh, yeah. You never get a Swede angry. You should see my Uncle Sven after a couple glasses of Aquavit.
Uh-huh.
The way I see it, when you guys leave off an obvious pick like 12 Monkeys from your top five list of time travel movies, there can basically be two reasons for it. A, you guys just didn't remember it, or B, you guys are morons. And let's face it, you possibly couldn't have forgotten about it. It's such an obvious pick. I mean, duh, 12 Monkeys. You know, Terry Gilliam, the guy that directed Time Bandits, a far inferior movie? The only credible explanation is B, so therefore, on behalf of the entire Film Spotting Army, I demand an explanation. Why do you guys hate 12 Monkeys?
Why do we hate it? Well, I don't hate 12 Monkeys. I actually think it's okay, but unfortunately, I just think it's okay. I'm not that impressed with that film. Maybe it's because I have such a deep disdain for Brad Pitt as an actor. I don't think he's good in the film. He annoys the crap out of me. So I'm not a big 12 Monkeys fan. It didn't even make my top 10, but I know you, Maddie, the answer is A. You just forgot it somehow.
I completely forgot it. I'm a drinker. So I remember when we first bandied about this topic, it was number one on my list. You know, around Monday, around about Thursday or Friday when I actually got around to making the list again, completely forgetting what I put down on Monday, I kind of got in a nostalgia kick. It would have been probably my number one, probably would have bumped T2 off of there.
Well,
I love that film.
I'm glad to hear it, only because that was the overwhelming response we got from listeners this week. Really, email after email saying, where was 12 Monkeys? Really echoing what Oscar had to say, including Arnaud Hubert in Kelseyville, California, who says, I can't believe you guys did not include anywhere in the top five 12 Monkeys. Maddie, how can you include Time Bandits and leave aside that other Oscar-nominated movie by Gilliam? He says that he remembers loving Time Bandits as a kid, but he recently saw it again, and he's not sure it stands the test of time, no pun intended. 12 Monkeys, though, while it has its flaws, it is, in his opinion, one of the best movies on that theme. We also got this one, Caroline in London, England, who mentioned it. She couldn't believe it. Everyone's in shock that we didn't mention 12 Monkeys. And I like what she says here. She says not only is it one of her favorite time travel films, it's probably in her top 10 movies of all time based on the French short film called La Jetée. And, of course, the Chris Marker film. I don't know if you've seen it, Maddie. I have many people mention La Jetée as well. Why wasn't that on there? It's a really fascinating piece. It's also only 28 minutes long.
It's a short film, right?
Yeah, so I kind of excluded it just for that reason. But it is obviously a time travel movie. It did inspire 12 Monkeys. Both are good picks. I'm just not a big Gilliam guy. I think I had him number three or something on my overrated directors list. So I am a moron, option B. Maddie, option A, you just forgot.
Exactly.
Okay, hopefully that will make everyone happy.
All right, well, moving on to some more top five time travel flick lists. Here's Alaric Hahn's top five. Number five, Somewhere in Time. It's campy and perhaps even a little dated, but this is a terrific movie. I loved as a kid thinking about traveling through time inside my own mind. Number four, The Philadelphia Experiment.
Here we go. Bad 80s.
This one barely stands the test of time, but another classic 80s trip through time by a military vessel when the ship returns to the present day in the film. I remember vividly the images of soldiers trapped in the metal on the ship after the journey. They had somehow slipped into the same space as the steel. It freaked me out when I was young. And number three, this one also got a lot of love on our message boards, on our internet. Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home, another 80s time travel flick, albeit a sequel. The intrepid space explorers return to Earth to retrieve two humpback whales to communicate with the destructive force in the future. It's a strange plot, but a classic. Number two, a tie, The Time Machine, the original, of course, and Donnie Darko.
There you go.
And number one, Back to the Future, a classic. The sound of Marty's head hitting the street always sounded so real to me.
Obviously, we agree with that pick there. We also agree with this pick from Pruthvi in India, and I have to admit, this is one I did just forget about. Pruthvi writes, while listening to your top five time travel movies, a movie from a couple of years ago struck me. It's Pleasantville, where present-day siblings Tobey Maguire and Reese Witherspoon get transported to a 50s black-and-white sitcom. Soon, people start turning from black-and-white to color as they start changing and questioning the norms of the show, town, and 50s culture in general. Some people may find it filled with too much symbolism, the colored people segregated from the black-and-white ones, the biting of the apple, yes, very notably in the film. But it's a good watch filled with some funny sequences and great actors, Joan Allen, William H. Macy, and Jeff Daniels. I completely agree, Pruthvi. I really like that film. I like it much better than the director's follow-up. I believe his name's Gary Ross. I think that's it, who also did Seabiscuit. I'll take Pleasantville.
Over Seabiscuit?
Yes, I will.
No way.
Yes.
I thought Pleasantville was just too simplistic. I really didn't love it at all.
No, I think it's pretty good.
I don't think it
I think
really,
it's profound.
I love
there
the way
go.
It See, this
deals
is,
with
this
culture.
Is what I get. This is, I love it. I love how this is how you enjoy movies.
Yes, I do.
You can walk away from a movie like The Mist and be informed about the nature of man.
Yes, exactly.
Gorgeous. I love it. I would love to be you for a day.
You're just looking at the tentacles and going, ooh, creepy.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Well, I like Pleasantville, I'm sorry, more than Seabiscuit. It is a good choice. Maybe not a time travel movie kind of in the same realm as Groundhog Day,
yeah,
maybe a time travel movie,
yeah,
but
think,
hey, they go from the present day back to the 50s. It works.
All right, here's another one from Aaron Maccabee. I'm not sure it would be considered a time travel movie, but I would consider Run Lola Run as one. I love the fast-moving music-covered film that gives the character Lola three chances to get things right over the space of less than 90 minutes. It is flashy, smart, and fun to watch. I've always wanted to have hair like Lola, but can never get the right shade of red.
Yeah, nice email there. Run Lola Run did come up from other listeners. It's a movie I like a lot. Tom Tykwer, I believe his debut film, or at least the film that really put him on the map, a guest here on Film Spotting a while back, but that's a really fun film.
It's almost a genre unto itself, because then you're looking into other movies like Sliding Doors and Twice Upon a Yesterday. I think Run Lola Run is certainly the cream of the crop of those, but
yeah, you're right.
Almost
it
a genre
kind
unto
of
itself.
Own
kind sub-genre. Of like Groundhog Day.
Mm-hmm. This one from Chad Surhall in Indianapolis, Indiana. He says, asking me what my top five time travel movies are is very similar to asking me what my general top five movies are. I am a maniac time travel movie fan, and I really am dying to know if Chad's 100% serious about this. He writes, I have the clock from Back to the Future stuck at 10:04. Tattooed on my forearm.
God, I love our listeners.
I love our listeners. He's so glad Time After Time was mentioned. Also, he discovered Primer and Sound of Thunder on the same day. Primer was very cool, but really frustrating to watch. I agree. I need to watch it again. Sound of Thunder is horribly, horribly, horribly bad / awesome, an absolute must-see. I'm serious. You really need to see it if you haven't yet. I have not. Also, Time Cop needs to be in there. He sounds like he enjoys movies a lot like you do, Maddie. Movies like Time Cop. And he says a movie that he's never heard anyone ever mention, Twice Upon a Yesterday.
Oh, I just mentioned it.
You did. A romantic comedy, very smart, very entertaining. Reminds him of Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. It's a film I have not seen. He also says if you're going to make a top five time travel movies, you do have to mention The Time Machine. I hope he means the original and not that god-awful remake with Guy Pearce,
Guy
I think,
Pearce,
and Jeremy Irons.
Right.
It's really brutal.
Okay, we've got one more here. This one's from Chris Huntington. Number five, Time Bandits. This is possibly the most subversive film ever made. Little people trying to stick it to none other than God. To its credit, is a movie I loved as a kid that I have continued to love as an adult. Number four, Dead Again. Lovers swap bodies, track down the murderer, and refine true love across time. Number three, another movie that got a lot of love on our message boards, Army of Darkness. I can't believe this didn't even get mentioned. There's nothing to recommend in this film other than the fact that it is a total blast. Number two, Pleasantville again. And number one, again. 12 Monkeys.
12 Monkeys there. But I do like Chris's email because he mentions Dead Again, and I don't know if it does match the time travel criterion, whatever it might be. But I love that film, of course. Big Kenneth Branagh fan, and of course a big Emma Thompson fan as well. It's really good. And Army of Darkness, this is the real reason I thought we had to read Chris's email here, is because he was not alone, as you suggested, in mentioning this film. Bruce Campbell, of course, Sam Raimi. I really like Army of Darkness a lot, and I'll just say I didn't mention it because we do try to keep it to five or six or eight, depending depending on how much we cheat, but Army of Darkness was in my top 10. It almost made the top 5. So, as always, we really appreciate the great feedback. If you've got any more feedback for us, send us an email, feedback@filmspotting.net.
Time for one last quick break. When we return, the 10 DVDs we must have this holiday season. Please stay with us.
In the land of salvation is where you'll find this masterpiece of a right-wing kidney punch and escape. Convict fool escape. Executions are nearly flawless. So writing forever in the deep, but taking it into the shallow is not a problem.
Time now to take a look at what is new on DVD coming out this Tuesday, and actually some of the movies that came out last week that we missed not doing this segment on last week's show. Maddie, Waitress is out, very positively reviewed film here on Film Spotting. Also, The Namesake and Hot Fuzz, a 3-disc collector's edition. That is a film that just missed. I'll give you a little hint here for the next segment. It did just miss my top 5 DVDs of 2007, but it's one I definitely would like to get my hands on. I don't know how you can get enough of Simon Pegg and Nick Frost. They're really great. So,
that's a great film.
Also, Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End. We mentioned it earlier, Maddie, in our
list. Is this
the third one? Biggest turkey of the year. Apparently, according to our listeners, the 2-disc limited edition set. If you are a big fan of that film, and I know many of our listeners are, despite the poll question, that is out now on DVD, and I know one we will definitely want to check out. Actually, Maddie, the first movie we reviewed together on Film Spotting back on your debut show, if you will. I'm getting all fuzzy and warm just thinking about it. It is Superbad, the 2-disc special edition of that. That is another film. Didn't quite make my top 5 of the year, but one I can't wait to own. Hopefully someone will buy it for me for Christmas.
I don't like thinking about you all fuzzy and warm. All right, well, we do have to thank those people that surfed their way over to filmspotting.net and were so generous this week with their donations. And here are your Sam Van Halgren nicknames. Jeremy Vital in New England. That's Jeremy S., and that is a gold member. Thank you, Jeremy. Jeremy, I'm cashing in my honesty policy. That's Jeremy L. Andy, I said brigade, not parade. Mason, yes, of course I'm him. Jordan, getting to know the parakeet a little too well. And Ivand, sweet as fruit from the tree of knowledge pie.
A little tie in there with Waitress, perhaps, from Sam. And actually, this may be the best time in the show here, Maddie, to mention to our listeners, I got the green light from
Sam. Oh, you did?
Sam,
okay, because I was going to say something.
No,
I didn't. All right.
I did get the green light from your predecessor here on Film Spotting. Sam Van Halgren will be welcoming into the world another Van hater. He and Carrie are expecting. So in 6 months or so, we'll have another little hater in the world, and we're very excited and very happy for Sam. Found out the great news last night, so we just wanted to pass along our congratulations to Sam and Carrie.
Check the underwriter killer.
Film Spotting's Top 5 is presented by Spout.com. Share your lists, reviews, and discuss movies with your friends for free at filmspotting.spout.com. You're listening to Film Spotting with Adam and Maddie, and it's top 5 time here on the show, beginning our end of the year awards. We're going to get to some of our favorite performances and, of course, the best films of the year in a few weeks, but we kind of like to kick it off with the movies that have been released on DVD this year that we feel like we absolutely have to add to our collection. Maddie, what's your number 5, and how did you form this list? You've said to me that you are not a big DVD guy, so really, what was your criteria in deciding your top 5 DVDs?
I'm not a big DVD guy. I mean, I watch about 2 movies a night. I usually fall asleep during the second one. So I just, DVDs are so utilitarian to me. I don't think of going out and spending $30 on a DVD. So I don't have a lot of them, honest to God. So I had to think of, all right, Christmas morning, what would I be excited about getting? So this is actually, yeah, so this is a very personal list for me.
Yeah.
I hope some people can take something away from it, because, and I hope my parents might be listening.
Yes, that's the whole point of this, really.
Right, exactly. All right, so my number five, all that said, is Caligula, the Imperial Edition.
Say it isn't so.
What? No, this thing has everything. There are tons of featurettes, the theatrical and the X-rated version, but what I'm getting it for, this is the topper, audio commentary from Malcolm McDowell and Helen Mirren.
Wow.
That's Christmas Day. I'm just going to pop it in.
You're going to pop that in. Forget A Christmas Story. It's a Wonderful Life. At the Robinson household, you're watching Caligula.
Exactly.
With the commentary
on. And I didn't like Margot at the wedding.
Yeah, I know. Bizarre. It's so heartwarming. That's really heartwarming.
What's your number five? Well, top that.
Yeah, I don't know that I can. I will say that I excluded box sets or big collections of releases here, you know, 3, 4, 5, 10 DVDs. I just felt like, of course, that would be on my wish list for the holidays, because I'm never going to spend $100 on a set of DVDs. But if someone wants to spend $100 for me, on me, they can. But as I said last year when we did this list, I am really big into the extra features. For me to actually justify going out and buying a DVD, because I don't actually buy a lot of them, then I want there to be some stuff on it that I can really enjoy the disc for a long period of time. So extra features are important to me. And my number five is, actually, I think I can maybe top Caligula. It's Short Bus, the unrated edition.
Ooh, my God.
Yes, John Cameron Mitchell.
They should box those together.
Yeah, we should have a great Christmas, a little softcore, hardcore porn Christmas together. We could watch Caligula and then follow it up with Short Bus. But this is John Cameron Mitchell's film, of course, from last year. It's got some great extra features on it, a cast commentary. It's got a half-hour making-of feature from casting through the shoot that follows the whole process of making the film. It has a how-to-shoot-sex featurette and 30 minutes of deleted scenes, which I believe you can actually also watch with commentary. So
I'm
all
my
over
list
Short
right
Bus.
Now. That's 5A.
There you
Short
go.
Bus.
It's my number five.
All right. Well, my number four is Under the Volcano. And the reason I'm putting this on there, I don't think it was available on DVD previously. I remember tried to find it on Netflix. Anyway, it's got a Criterion edition now, a movie from 1984. It's worth it for Albert Finney's performance alone as an alcoholic British diplomat in a small Mexican town on the eve of World War II, directed by John Huston. And again, just a tremendous performance. I think it was nominated for an Academy Award.
Well, I am dying to check that film out now. I love Albert Finney and John Huston. I have not seen Under the Volcano, so a great pick there. My number four one, I don't think we're going to find on your list, even though I think you just sort of liked the film. It's Knocked Up, extended and unrated, the two-disc collector's edition. Again, you get into the extra features here on this two-disc set. Full-length commentary featuring Judd Apatow, Seth Rogen, and Bill Hader from Saturday Night Live.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Yeah, and also both discs include sections with deleted scenes and extended and alternate takes. So I love that film. I feel like there probably is a lot of stuff on the cutting room floor that's pretty damn funny. So Knocked Up's one I want to check out.
Yeah, almost made my list. Well, my number three is a pretty obvious one, I think, to most of our listeners, and that's Blade Runner, The Final Cut. Now, this release is on 12/18. Doesn't that seem a little late to you?
Yeah, a little bit. You're right. For the holiday season?
Yeah.
Last minute gift buying?
Yeah. Well, anyway, mark it down.
Mark it down. Blade Runner. Matty Robinson wants it. Okay, well, my number three is Grindhouse Presents Death Proof.
Do I frighten you? Is it my scar?
It's your car.
Yeah, I know. Sorry.
Have you been following us?
No, but that's what I love about Austin. It's just so damn small.
You've seen this guy before? I saw him outside of Guero's.
And I saw you outside Guero's, too. You saw my car, I saw your legs. Now look, I ain't stalking y'all, but I didn't say it wasn't a wolf.
So you really weren't following us?
I'm not following you, butterfly.
The extended and unrated two-disc special edition of just Death Proof, the Quentin Tarantino film. And I won't go through the litany of extra features. It's really loaded. But the general take on this film is that the extra dialogue in the extended edition doesn't really help a movie that's already perhaps overloaded with dialogue. And that may be true, though. I love the dialogue in the film. But I want to find that out for myself.
Oh,
I
you
really
haven't
do.
Seen it yet?
No, I've not seen it yet. Just on its own, Death Proof, the film extended. So that is one I really want to check out. See how it holds up with extra stuff and kind of as its own feature and not just the tail end of Grindhouse.
All right. Well, my number two is Revenge of the Nerds, Panty Raid Edition. easily one of my favorite movies of all time, and I'm getting it for the deleted scenes. I can't believe there are deleted scenes. I have seen this movie so many times.
Yeah.
I think it's going to blow my mind to see some scenes that got cut, because it's just not going to compute.
Well, despite our very different upbringings, just as Sam and I had different upbringings with him in New Hampshire, you had a much more idyllic upbringing, I guess, on the Minnesota farm, watching great old movies with Jimmy Stewart rather than a lot of stuff like Revenge of the Nerds. I'm surprised that we had that same experience, that same love for this film. Probably we saw it in grade school.
No, when we finally got rid of the Betamax VCR around about 1994 and we actually started renting videos, my parents, again, wouldn't let me watch anything with violence in it. But anything with sex, that was fine.
Okay.
Oh, totally fine. Of course.
You're like the opposite. Your parents are the anti-MPAA.
Yeah, exactly.
Basically.
Yeah.
Violence is okay, but sex isn't.
Exactly. Okay. I'm still mad at my mom, though, because she threw away all my little plastic guns for my Star Wars figures.
Yeah.
Basically rendering them worthless now. Because that's what everybody wants. I go on eBay. They all want the little plastic guns.
And you don't have it.
I don't have them.
So you're holding a grudge against your mom. She could make you feel a lot better by buying some of these movies
exactly.
for Christmas.
Thank you. Sharon, okay. Tim.
I hope you're listening. My number two is the Days of Heaven Criterion Collection, the film, of course, 1978 from Terrence Malick. It includes a commentary track with the crew members. The rest of the extras are interviews. There's a new audio conversation with Richard Gere on it and new interviews with Haskell Wexler, who is obviously a very brilliant cinematographer, and John Bailey, some of the other cast and crew, and a sit-down with Sam Shepard, who I am a big fan of. He, of course, is in that film. And the cinematographer, Nestor Almendros, who shot this film. I'm sure I'm probably butchering his last name, but really one of the most luscious films ever shot, almost exclusively, if not exclusively, at the Magic Hour. It's really a beautiful, interesting, lyrical Terrence Malick film. I haven't seen it in many years. I really want to check it out, and I want to see how the transfer went and how those colors show up on my DVD player on the flat screen. So I'm going to check out Days of Heaven. Hopefully that's one I'm going to get for Christmas for sure.
All right, great choice. All right, well, my number one is Saturday Night Live, the complete second season. And the reason I'm hyping this one is because I received the first season, I don't know if it was last year or 2 years ago, and it's really nicely put together, and it's beautifully packaged, actually. I have it out on my TV out in the living room, so check it out.
So you're including that even after our long discussion today where I tried to convince you not to include a TV show in our top five?
Yes, well, because the name of our list is Top 5 DVDs of 2007.
Okay.
And if I'm going to be true to myself, which I always want to be,
uh-huh.
I had to go with my heart.
I didn't know you were so literal, Maddie. Next time I'll spell out that it's movies
on integrity.
DVD.
It's called integrity. It's called integrity.
I know,
Campanera.
It's something I don't have.
The sun is sinking in the west. The cattle go down to the stream. The red wing settles in her nest. It's time for a cowboy to dream. Purple eyes in the canyon.
My number one here, Maddie, is Rio Bravo, the two-disc Ultimate Collector's Edition DVD. This is another movie, of course, like all the ones on my list, that is really loaded with extra features. There's a featurette directed by Time film critic Richard Schickel, and Sidney Pollack narrates it. That's all about Howard Hawks. And there is a documentary with interview segments with Hawks and other clips from his films. And, of course, Peter Bogdanovich and John Carpenter, I think, have a commentary on this, or they have a featurette where they talk about it. Of course, John Carpenter, Assault on Precinct 13, 1976, it's in many ways a remake of Rio Bravo. So there's that. There's just a lot of extra features. And so Rio Bravo, a movie I absolutely adore. My favorite Western.
But one thing it can't offer that I wish it would.
Yes.
A Walter Brennan commentary. How much would you pay for that?
Well, I'd pay a lot of money. That would be pretty great. A lot better, I think, than the Ricky Nelson commentary. Maybe.
Yeah, exactly.
Though he's really good in Rio Bravo. So there you go. Rio Bravo is my number one.
All right. Well, those are our top five DVDs, not necessarily movies of 2007. Send your list or any other feedback to feedback@filmspotting.net. You can also give us a call at 206-203-2463 and leave a voicemail.
Opening wide this weekend, the new thriller Awake with Jessica Alba, Hayden Christensen, and Terrence Howard. I saw a trailer for this last night, Maddie, before The Mist, and it's one of those movies I just will not watch because I cannot watch a movie about someone in surgery who is conscious the whole time of the fact that he's being surgered upon. That's something I can't sit through. So
you got me to The Mist. I think you need to broaden your horizons.
I need to.
Turnabout is fair play.
Okay, you actually want to see Awake?
No, not really.
Okay, that's what I thought. In limited release, The Savages, you mentioned it earlier in the show with Laura Linney and Philip Seymour Hoffman. It is a film that everyone seems to be loving except us. And Julian Schnabel's The Diving Bell and The Butterfly, we actually talked about that. We had a guest commentary on that film on our Chicago Film Festival show. That's a film that you're definitely going to hear more about as we get into our end-of-the-year awards, at least from me. On next week's show, reviews of Atonement and Grace is Gone. At least that's what we're planning right now. Check the calendar page at filmspotting.net for any updates. We'll also start handing out the end-of-the-year awards with our top five male and female supporting performances of the year.
Well, we should also mention where our Bergman Marathon is
now.
I know a lot of people are probably wondering. Yeah, there have been a lot of lulls. We are going to have to push it back until January just so we can get in all these top five
lists. Just too much going on. We got these end-of-the-year awards and too many films that we want to see that are important right now. And Bergman, he's brilliant, but he can wait.
Yeah, and we are getting a lot of emails from people that are playing along with us. And continue. We certainly are reading those, so please continue sending those in. All right, well, thanks to Alex and Angela on our message boards, Frank Huckle and the great Candace Griffiths. Thanks also to Calexico and Touch and Go Records for this week's music. Learn more at touchandgorecords.com.
Real quick, Maddie, I also want to send out a special thanks to Joe Dassault, our producer at Chicago Public Radio. Last week, we had an interview with Todd Haynes, and we played that on the show. And at the end of the show, we thanked Candace and Frank and Alex and Angela, all the people that help us out with this show. And yet I never once mentioned Joe, and I feel really bad about it, because without him, you wouldn't have heard that Todd Haynes interview.
He's a champ.
He is a champ. Without him, you wouldn't hear us on Chicago Public Radio. We really would be lost without him. So thank you to Joe. I just wanted to get that in there as well.
All right. For Film Spotting, I'm Maddie Robinson.
And I'm Adam Kempinar. Thanks for listening.
This conversation can serve no purpose anymore. Goodbye.
Film Spotting is brought to you by Spout. Visit filmspotting.spout.com to discuss this episode. How can the DVD gnome do a top five, though? Because he doesn't like anything.
Oh, that's right. That's right. He wouldn't have one. He'd just be like, well, this is a piece of shit. These are the least shittiest films this year. Days of Thunder, Criterion Collection.
Nice. Is that out? Did I miss that? Criterion. Rubin's Racing, Maddie.
That, I do actually. I like Days of Thunder.
Hey, how can you not? It's Top Gun in a race car.
You know,
literally.
You know another film I thought about? The Roadhouse.
Yeah.
That's a great film.
I watched it like a week and a half ago.
If it's on TV,
I'm not kidding. It was on TBS. My brother-in-law, Sean, and I, we watched the whole movie.
That and School Ties.
I thought you'd another be bigger. Yeah, I get that a lot.
Right. Ladies and gentlemen, Dalton.
Yeah, it's classic.